PHP Radio
on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network,
your number one source for all things golf.
Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.
Hello, you golfing legends, and welcome back to another episode of the original Off Course. I'm your host, Dan Edwards, and joining me this week is Mr. Nick Sherburn of Club Champion fame. Nick, what's up, man?
Hey, Dan, how are you? Thanks for having me back.
I'm doing great. I'd sort of already pre-teased that this wouldn't be publicized for about a week, but it's U.S. Open week while we're recording, so I'm pretty excited about that. I feel like major swing's a really fun time of the year for everyone. I think we talked previously about the Masters really kicking off a lot of golf stuff. Do you find the majors to get your activity elevated, or is it pretty much consistent right now?
Yeah, we always joke when we're doing our planning around the company, specifically when new folks come in, and we're like, well, if you really want to see when it starts buzzing, it's when the Masters happens, right? That's like the unofficial official start of like golf season. That may be less in certain states. Who knows? That might be an Illinoisan talking, but that's what it is. But yeah, I mean, everybody gets excited around the majors. It's when people finally like stop their lives a little bit and watch some golf sometimes. And, you know, I think in today's world with everything that's going on between LIV and the PGA Tour and elevated events, non-elevated events, there seems like there's just less tournaments where everybody's in it, right? And so now this is like even a bigger deal because, well, everybody's playing.
Yeah. One of the things I think is interesting about the majors is how invested people get into them, regardless of whether they watch tour golf. I'm certainly guilty of that. I definitely don't miss majors, but the other weeks I'm like, hey, I can go golf with my family, or I can watch this random dude win on a Sunday, and I'm obviously picking to go and play route. But you know, I look back to last year, and Clark won with the putter that Ricky sort of made famous, or remade famous, and I have a really leading question on that one for you. Because that putter is so polarizing, do you find people coming in and say, hey, I want to get fit to that putter because that thing was nasty?
Yeah, so it's really funny. So, you know, I've had Club Champion for, I've been growing it for 25 years. Some people think we're this like gigantic company. We are a big company, but, you know, we started as a mom and pop one store 25 years ago. And it used to be for a lot of years, what won on Sunday sold on Monday. That was the old saying, right? And, you know, it's funny. I kind of laughed at that because, you know, I'm all about, you know, well, wait, only if it fits you, right? Now, you shouldn't just go buy it because it won on Sunday. But I do like the fact that it stirred people's thought process, right? And I think today there's less of that, except for when it's a unique product. So you're talking the jailbird, I can't remember which one it's called, where it's in, it's more of a, you know, longer putter, counterbalance putter. Yeah, that perked people's interest, and they got people in there, and they asked questions about it. And should I try this? Sure, let's get in there and do it. Another one would be like the Lab Broomstick with Lucas Glover last year. You know,
yeah,
Lucas Glover won 2 weeks. I mean, you don't really hear Lucas Glover's name forever, and then all of a sudden he wins 2 weeks in a row, and he's using this funky looking broomstick putter. Before you know it, everybody's looking at it. So, I like it because it stirs the thought process of people. Like, I don't have to do it the same way everybody else does it. But yeah, we definitely see it.
Yeah, you kind of led me into my next commentary, which was going to be about Lab because it's such a visually different concept. And listen, I respect new ideas. I really do. But everyone has to understand it doesn't look like an answer. So there is definitely a perspective when they get their hands on that thing, like, oh God, what is that thing? And then they pop with it like, oh God, what is that thing? Like it's an excitement, you know? So we've had some conversations on THP recently about Lab, and you know, when the tour starts to see more activity with that type of putter, it's definitely going to kick some serious discussion. I want to dial that back a little bit, because you had mentioned what wins on Sunday sells on Monday. I feel like golfers are a little bit less gullible in that regard today than they were 10 years ago, 20 years ago. What do you think's been the biggest shift there?
Well, I think they're just more educated in the fitting process, right? Like, they're more educated in the fact that they understand that not every product's for every person, that different clubs launch different. Different clubs spend more. Some are more forgiving, less forgiving. I think there's also that the club they're hitting may not be the same club that you can go buy. I think there's just some of that understanding nowadays. It's part of what I complain about when we're in marketing meetings. It's like, you know, we used to be able to talk about fitting and everybody was like, okay, they're fitting people and other people aren't fitting people. Now everybody talks about fitting. I feel like we have to redefine fitting. What is a fitting? What defines a fitting? So, you know, like it's the same thing. People have gotten smarter and they've all been using the same terminology. I think that's what's changed that is at least to a degree, a lot of people get that they should be getting fit or at least asking questions before they just get online and buy it just because Scotty Scheffler won with it the day before.
Yeah, I definitely feel like there's less of that willingness to just freak out and buy something. I mean, no doubt it still exists. Of course it still exists. But like if you go to a company's website today versus 20 years ago, you can pick from a list of shaft options. I know some of them are upcharged, some of them aren't. But there's an understanding that golfers are going to be a little bit more specific in their pursuit. And then obviously they have outlets like Demo Days or something more proficient like, I don't know, Club Champion to go and really dial it all in. It follows up on that as well with the whole Demo Day versus what you guys are doing. And I know most people out there, especially those listening to this podcast, are very familiar with Club Champion's product, but tell me why that Demo Day is going to be so inferior to what they experience when they come to one of your stores.
So, you know, I love answering this question. I'm actually going to take it even a little farther. Difference between a Demo Day, difference between getting fit at your club, difference between getting fit at a big box or like a general retailer, difference in getting fit at Club Champion. And I don't like to dog anybody. That's not my intent here. My intent that every business, as a person that has run a business for 25 years, every business plan is different, correct? And everybody's trying to go after a different segment of the market and a different whatever. And that's just what it's set up. The problem is we can all start talking the same and then it confuses the general public, even though it wasn't any of our intention to do that or anybody's intention really to do that. So, you know, take your first, your Demo Day, right? You're going to go out there. You're going to have you might have one company, you might have 20 companies on the lesson tee there, the range that you can go up. But again, you're getting a general demo tech guy. Usually who they have for like these Demo Days are the local rep's going to hire most likely a kid or a college kid or somebody fresh out of college. And they're probably not going to give them much training. Just say, hey, here's the products you're going to sell. And here's a tent and here's some clubs. Go out there and have fun and go, right? And there's not, you know, sure, they're going to be able to talk to you a little bit because they're probably golf-minded people, but you may or may not have a launch monitor. You may or may not have a great launch monitor. You may or may not have a premium ball versus a range ball. You're not going to have all the options. You're only going to have a certain subset of the options that they can carry around. And then you're not going to have any measurement equipment. So at the end of the day, you don't know that the club you're hitting, you don't know what the swing weight is. You don't necessarily, I mean, you're making assumptions based off what they should be, but you actually don't know. You're not measuring the club. So when you go to buy the golf club somewhere, whether you go online and, I don't know, go to discountdans.com or whatever the hell, or you go down the street and you buy it from an Edwin Watts or something, you don't know that that club is going to be the same club that you just hit at that demo day. And even if you had the person there order it, you don't know if the club that's coming is going to perform the same as that demo day. Now that translates exactly down the road. So like, you go to, now let's go into your club, like your general club. And a lot of people go, well, it's my pros doing the fitting or my assistant pros doing the fitting. Listen, I have a lot of pros and assistant pros that come to work for me and we train them. Just because they have a PGA symbol, listen, I respect that, but it doesn't make them any different of a club fitter than any other person. It's not when you go to PGA school, here's a club fitting manual, now you're a master club fitter. So, you know, the reality is again, you're locked into a certain subset of products that they have. You're locked into whatever range balls and whatever launch monitor they have. And again, whatever knowledge they have. And again, they're going to farm out the order and you don't know whether you're getting the club that you were hitting in the fitting. And same thing. Now it gets a little bit even more confusing when you start talking about some of these stores, you know, like Golf Tech and PGA Superstore or whatever. They're trying to look a lot like us, right? Like put the clubs on the wall and do all that. But really all they did was take the clubs out of the cart that you saw everywhere else and put it up on the wall. And again, fitting, they might have a little bit more training than the average bear for club fitting to a degree. But again, they're not, it's still not going to have all the options. It's not going to have all the spec changes you can do. You have to live with what the manufacturer allows, because again, they're going to farm out the order, and the order is going to go get built at the manufacturer, and you don't know if you're going to get the club. That's what Club Champion is about, right? Like, we have our value proposition, and this is what makes us so different than everywhere else. It sometimes gets lost on people. It's sometimes when you go online and we get the hate for like, wow, they're just over, they're expensive, they overprice everything, bop, 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 bop. No, 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 no. Let me take you through the value proposition. We have TrackMan. It's the best thing on the market. We have 65,000 plus combinations. Our fitters don't know what the costs of those are. They don't know the margins. They don't know our inventory. They're not told the fish is going bad. They're not spiffed. They're nothing. Okay. So they sell whatever is best for that client to do, right? Well, here's the best part. They're also, like, I did 4 interviews today. When we hire somebody, they go for 4 different people. Okay. They go through a recruiter, a store manager, an area sales manager, an RSM, actually 5 technically, but me, I'm the final say. So I actually get on the phone with them. Once they vet all that, they come to us for a 1-month training program. There is nobody in the industry that gets training like Club Champion. Not to mention, we have continuous training all year long when new products come out. The vendors hand-selected something we do. We have videos made. We have content made. We have all kinds of stuff made to make sure our fitters have the best knowledge in the world. Coupled with the fact that we take 1 million swings a month in our bays across our 132 stores here domestically, and we made an AI platform. I worked with a team of data scientists to do it. And so not only are these the smartest fitters in the planet, they have an AI software looking at all these swings we're taking on how all this product works to help guide them through it so that they're not just lost into certain products, because obviously you can't hit everything. But I think the best part about what we do, and it's what set this business, this is what got me into this business 1 million years ago, is how do I translate that fit to the golf course? How do I get the results from the fit to the golf course? And this is what gets lost on golfers that may not, you know stuff about building golf clubs and how little specs matter. Like 8 grams of head weight can be the difference. It can be a half a flex difference in a shaft and how a shaft flexes. And so, you know, one of the specialties is that we take, you know, we build the golf club for you. So we make sure that the club that you got excited about in the bay actually ends up in your bag. And that's why you get the performance. It's why we can give the perfect fit guarantee. So, you know, that's our value proposition. Nobody really does that. That's us. And I got that concept from the PGA Tour. That's what the PGA Tour does. And you can sit there and say, you know, I'm not PGA Tour quality. Well, you spend enough time playing this game, not asking you to buy a Mercedes over a Buick. I'm asking us, you know, either to spend the same amount of money or a couple $100 more to make sure that you have the best clubs in your bag and they perform like the fit.
I'm going to ask you a follow-up to that, to sort of reference how finicky golfers can be. I experienced it late last year, and he's probably gonna get mad at me when I talk about it, but it is what it is. A related individual in my world purchased a set of irons and did not believe them to be a good solid fit. Just didn't seem right, didn't feel right. And I convinced him by hitting a shot with his irons and hitting them quite well. They're a regular flex set, and I hit them well. I said that nothing wrong with these irons, nothing wrong with the flex. Kind of gave him that, you know, okay, maybe moment. So he goes and he puts his normal grips on them, and suddenly they were perfect. They felt right. They swung right. They performed well. And I want to circle that back to the bay, because I think inherently golfers are insane. I mean, part of us being willing to be abused week in and week out by this beautiful game. Exactly. Part of it is that we sort of have to be. But when it comes down to something so finite like a grip, there's no way you can accommodate that for every golfer to put their grip on every shaft. So how do you work around those really finite components of a fitting?
Well, and that's what's so important. And that's what we tell golfers, and sometimes gets lost by people. These, to your point, the weight of that grip, a standard size grip typically weighs around 50 grams. And then if you go to a mid-size grip, now you're about 60 grams and maybe even a little heavier than that in some models. And it just goes up from there. Now, there's anomalies where they've made bigger grips that are lighter. Like I use a Jumbo Max grip that weighs almost the same as a normal size grip. But the long story short is you have to accommodate for that. And that's the details we pay attention to. You don't see swing weight scales in many fits around the country, okay? In fact, I don't even know where you see them outside. If you don't go to a Club Champion or a Cool Clubs or a True Spec, you don't really see a swing weight scale. And that weight of a golf club, to me, is about the most important part of the golf club. And so when we're sitting there doing this fit, part of that concept and we're talking about it is weight, swing weight, total weight, all that stuff, and making sure that final club comes out to that. And part of that equation is when we get to the grip, okay, well, what grip do we think fits best? And what now, how do we have to weight the club to accommodate that grip so that we get the club to play correctly? And these are details that matter. I mean, I have so many studies we could, you know, show golfers and I could point them to that we have on our website to show like just the like little swing weight differences can be the difference between a golf club performing super good and not. And it's why the best players in the world spend so much time doing it.
One of the things I remember most from my time in Club Champion is the loft and lie machine isn't in the build room. It's right on the floor for the guys to use. And that sort of spun me for a loop the first time I went into a store because it was just right there. And sure enough, within an hour, I'd seen it used twice. And it's like, man, you guys really are that invested in getting the right fit on the fly, not just saying, hey, this is probably better for you. Now, I know you have different heads that support a little bit closer to that, but not just the loft and the lie, but the loft too plays a pretty critical role in the results of a shot. So was that an easy decision early on to incorporate that?
It's a must. I don't remember a world where we didn't have that. That was from day one. And here's why. Well, there's a bunch of whys, but here they are. Okay, first of all, I like people to understand that no two swing weight scales are the same, and no two loft and lie scales of the machine are the same. They're all built to, you know, in a general form, but at the end of the day, we're talking degrees here. And so a zero out at one machine is different than a zero out of another machine. And so I like golfers to know that we have calibration tools that we'll be happy to show you at our stores. And I have them sitting out here. I sit 5 feet off our production floor because that's where I like to be. I like to be in the mix. People think I'm weird, but I like it. And I like hearing the saws all day, and I like getting out there occasionally and building a golf club myself. But the point is we spend a lot of time to make sure that all our machines company-wide, worldwide, match so that with the club you get measured on in the bay ends up being the club that you get measured on. You go to a lot of fittings, and they put the tape on the bottom of the sole, or they have a couple heads. One's standard on the hosel, one's two up or two flat or whatever. And they make, to your point, kind of a general assumption, okay? Well, when you come to a fit, there's a lot of people that 1 degree makes a huge difference between them hitting it really good and really poorly. And so what we like to do is sit there and be able to actually have you test and see how the different – I did a fitting yesterday, and I went 62.5, 61.5, and 60.5 for this person's 6-iron. Hit the 62.5 like garbage, hit the 60.5 like garbage. When I got to 61.5, smoked right down the middle. And the guy was like, man, that was like just that little difference. I'm like, well, you see it. I'm just doing it. Like, I'm moving it. You're the one producing it. So, I mean, it makes a big difference in being able to show them how a golf club moves. Now, the other thing that's interesting about that is when you start playing with loft and lie, like a lot of people will go, well, you know, you go there, you get stronger lofts. I don't know if there's many sets these days that we build to the stock lofts. Every loft is unique based on the player, right? So, yeah, it may start as a 26 or 27 or 28 degree 6-iron, but maybe that person needs more launch and spin, so we weaken it up. We like the head, right? We like the forgiveness and the, you know, ball speed and look, but we need a little launch and spin. Let's add some loft, and then we make your progression, or vice versa. But you also have to be careful with that. You want to be able to test that, because anytime you're messing with loft, you're messing with offset, which is also messing with bounce. And so you want to be able to hit it and know that it's going to produce what you want so that there's no guesswork. And so, I like showing the customer. I think it's cool. Most people don't know you can bend a golf club. Most people don't know you can just do it right there. And it's usually a cool show and tell kind of thing to get the point across. Like, details matter. I don't care if you're a 36 handicap or a professional tour player.
Yeah. I think one of the things that a lot of golfers overlook or don't care about or don't pay enough attention to is loft at address and lie at address mean absolutely nothing. It's loft at contact, dynamic loft at contact, dynamic lie at contact. There's no way we haven't talked about this before, but I am so deeply invested in that logic. Not even talking about the way the club goes into the ball, but that critical moment of contact is your club head square to the ground, is the loft where you want it to be in that window. And it does that put it the results in the window you're looking for, because all those things sort of add up, right?
Yeah. Well, it'll be funny. Here's an extreme example, but you'll get like a player and you'll have to go like they're just launching to the moon, too much launch, too much spin. And you'll put them in an 8-degree head, turn that setting as low as possible. This thing may be 6.5. And this person's like a 15 handicap. And they'll look at me and they'll go, well, Nick, I mean, I can't hit that. How can I hit that low loft of a driver? That's when I bring up that dynamic loft on TrackMan and I go, well, it's not 6.5 when you hit the ball. It's actually 13.5 when you hit the ball because of how much you throw the club head underneath it. And they're like, wait, what? And I'm like, yeah, just because what's the loft on the club at address, to your point, is not the loft that actually happens when you hit the ball. Whether it's just poor swing technique, or maybe you just hit way up on it like a Justin Thomas or somebody else. And so, you know, the loft at address is just a number. It's what happens when you actually come through. Same with lie angle. You know, you'll get people and they're like, well, my buddy says that you fit me for the wrong lies. And I'll say, oh, yeah, he did. And I go, well, why does he think that? Well, my toe's in the air. Toes in the air when? Well, he says when he stands behind me when I'm addressing, toes in the air. Okay. Well, let's go back and do another test. And then, you know, it's perfect. And I go, that's because it doesn't matter what happens at address. That's your address position. What happens at impact's what matters. And you stand up and you throw your hands at it, and all of a sudden the toe's in the ground. Actually, I'm one of those people. It's fun because people don't. I actually like those moments because it's like the aha moments for people where they're like, oh, I get it now.
Yeah.
And it's not like a suit, right? Like people want to think it's a suit. So like it should just have this certain look and feel and whatever. And it's like, no, that's not like that.
Right. Man, it's funny. And they make the drive in there feeling like they're going to win an argument or win a battle. And they're just,
yeah,
you know, it makes me laugh as much as the guy who 10 years ago got fit for two upright. And his swing has been modified by a handful of 24 packs of beer or a bunch of McDonald's or, you know, 10 years of age. And suddenly it's, you know, neutral or too flat, but they're so invested in that two up because they heard it a decade ago. But it's just their swing idea. It's never going to change. But in reality, yeah. I mean, it could change season to season.
And here's the part I love about that statement you just made. So often you hear people go, well, I'm two up, I'm three up, I'm one flat. What does that mean? Can you tell me what that means? Because there is no standard. So,
and what company, right? Yeah, what demo right. day told you that? Was what it Mizuno? Company,
what model, what make, what year? Can you help me with that? Because there is no such thing as a universal statement of that. That's why, like, it's good. I always tell golfers, don't worry about if you're one up or two up or three up. Remember what your 6-iron lie is. And then that's what's important. And by the way, every golf club and every shaft could change your lie. Some people that does and some people doesn't. I have extreme, like I play a little softer shaft than most people would think for my tempo. And because of that, I get like toe down, I get droop in the shaft a little bit. So based on the head and the shaft, I can sometimes fluctuate a little bit on my lie angle just by how it droops. Not everybody's like that, but some people are. So there's other factors at play there.
Yeah, that's a conversation for the next show, I think, for sure. Going into droop, because I think it's a really cool thought, but there's a couple things I'd love to still talk about today, and I know that's like a 20-minute window we don't have. I want to shift it a little bit to putter fittings. Putters and putting has been a huge discussion on THP lately. Talk a lot about improving the putting, and personally, I think it's one of the easiest ways to get better at golf is to drop the number of, and not get better, score better, is to reduce the number of putts you have. What has the activity been over the last couple of years with putting? Is that increased? Is it, say, fairly static? Or where are people with that?
It's been increased, and we've definitely put way, you know, last 3 years in a row, we've had September be our putter fitting month, where if you come in and you buy a new putter or you buy a putter shaft, the fitting's free. I mean, to me, putter fitting is the gateway drug to fitting. If you don't believe in fitting yet, go get your putter fitted. You use it every hole, okay? It's not a terribly huge investment. Maybe you don't even need a new putter. Maybe you just need your putter tweaked. But it can make the biggest impact the quickest, right? Like, you know, it's 40% of your game. It's 40% of your shots typically. And so I love talking about it because, you know, most people sit there and go, well, it's a look and it's a feel thing. Sure. I mean, we definitely don't want you to have something you hate the look and feel of, but that's subjective. It's not really what's going to help you. Maybe confidence level of touch, which matters. But if you don't have that right toe hang, that right weight, that right loft, that right lie, you know, all that stuff, you're just going to struggle putting. Or you can get a putter that just works with what you do, and you're going to have way more success. And instead of maybe having 36 putts around, you have 32. Well, that's four strokes right there. So and people are getting it, and it's important. And I do think, like what we talked about at the beginning of this, like seeing guys with that lab or the jailbird or break or whatever it is, that at least perks the question of, wait, should I look at this? So.
Yeah, I think there is a lack of understanding that putters are more than just a visual. We talked a little bit about dynamic loft and loft at address, but what people don't realize is there's a very particular loft on putters, and it's not the same company to company. It's not really the same model to model. And a guy I may go putt with someone and you can see the ball just bouncing. I'm like, have you ever got fit for your putter? Well, no, I just really like the way this feels and I make a fair few putts with it. So I go, okay, but you know, if you just tweak that a hair, that ball will be glued to the green while it rolled. And that eliminates a lot of your misses or potential fall off line because you're interacting better with the turf. Oh, I never thought to do that. Well why? you know, what I really liked about my experiences at Club Champion was using Sam, the putt lab, and seeing what my stroke was doing, because it became more of, you know, that whole seeing is believing. Someone can tell me I don't have a lot of rotation in my face, but until I actually see it on a screen and like, this is your putter ID or your putting ID, it's like, man, I didn't know I did that. And sure enough, it explained a lot of things that I believed were happening versus a couple of my friends, because we use a couple other technologies and realize like we have two totally different strokes. And at one point, we're using the same putter, and that is pure stupidity.
Right? No, I always tell the story. So my first partner in this business, when we took it from my old business, EJL Custom Golf, to Club Champion, and he's still with me today, Joe Lee, he's our chairman. And there's a guy that played at Marquette, college golfer, went out in the world, made some money, was a member at Olympia Field, still played amateur golf, high level here in Chicago. And I got paired up with him in 2009. Some customers took me out on my only day off was that Sunday back then. And I went to go play Olympia. It was so exciting. You know, customers would take me out. And they said, hey, we're your buddy. He doesn't believe in club fitting. He wants to bug him a little bit. He's got to. He's too good of a player to not have custom clubs. Well, one of the first things that happened, that first hole at Olympia Fields North, par 5, beautiful. He gets up there. And he has like a forward press, almost like Phil Mickelson, okay? And this thing, this ball, like he's a good player to scratch, but he would de-loft it so much he'd almost squirt the ball in the hole. Now, he would play it, but it would be like this squirt, like right off the face, and it kind of skid a little bit and then kind of almost tail. And I turned to him right at there. I mean, I just met him at the tee box, right? I said, you know, you would be a better putter if you had more loft on your putter. And he turns around and he goes, there's loft on a putter? Yes, they all have a certain loft on them. And, you know, but by the way, even if they have a loft on them, it may not be the right loft for you. Look at your forward press on your hands. You're good. You know how to make it happen. You've done it for so long. But if we put some more loft on there, you would just naturally roll the ball. Well, naturally, I got him to come in about a week later, bugging him, put him through a putter fit, put about 6 degrees of loft on his putter. He started making anything. And by the way, then he started investing in the business and he's been here ever since. Because he's like, man, how did I not know that? Well, because people don't talk about it. They don't know. And it's a big difference it can make. It didn't even matter that he was a scratch. It's just every golfer has a certain loft they should have on their putter. I'm the opposite. I told you, I already fling the head at everything. So for me, I do it with my putter too. I need to have more like half degree, 1 degree of loft on my putter to get it rolling correctly.
Yeah. What I love about that is it's one very tiny component of a very big story with putting. Like, people don't realize the neck you choose plays a significant role. They don't realize the alignment aid you choose plays a significant story. And it all has to do with how it works with your stroke, how it works with your eye. couldn't tell you how many guys. They say, well, which eye dominance do you have? What does that mean?
Yeah.
All right, let's do the little circle thing. Okay, I'm left eye dominant. Well, you should probably look at this type of alignment. Oh, I don't use that. That's weird. Like, how often do you make putts? Not terribly often.
I tell people about loft too, and I know not everybody will be watching this, but like if you have a putter face and you have too much loft on it, you're probably going to hit that ball in the bottom of the putter, not in the middle of the putter, right? And so you're already off, not only on a loft standpoint, you're not even hitting the stable part of the ball, you're going to get it. And vice versa, if you have too little loft, you're hitting it off the top of the putter face. So having that loft is how you get it nice and centered out in that putter. I mean, to your point, there's all these little things, and people will tell themselves, eh, it doesn't matter for me. It matters. So let me
ask you from a club champion standpoint, are you seeing a very significant shift into mallets? Or are you seeing the persistence of blade putters? And I'll add another layer to that because I know it's happening a lot. Companies are introducing these blade looking putters that might be maybe have a little bit of extra depth to them that are just loaded with MOI because of where the weight is. What are you seeing the trends there?
Yeah, I would definitely say I'd say the spider brought that. The first thing that really pushed everybody that was, well, shouldn't say, started pushing people that way. There's two comments on this. I think nobody could dispute forever a mallet's going to be more forgiving and allow you to not be so worried about hitting the center and losing energy and ball speed. And so, but the problem was, is almost every mallet for many, 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 many years was only face balanced.
Face balance, I knew it.
Which is the toe hang of the putter, and that's how the putter rotates. And that's how you square up the putter. When you talk about Lab, one of the things that Lab is talking about is they're talking about untorque yourself. But what they're saying is they're taking that rotational point out of it so that you don't have to worry about trying, and you don't know you're doing it, but your muscles do, fighting this rotation, right? Well, you can also just, you know, there's another answer to this. And believe me, I love Lab putters, so don't get me wrong. But there's another answer too, which you can just have the proper toe hang based on your rotation, and that'll help you square up too. Well, when a mallet was only face balance, it limited what hook that could fit. That Spider Tour was one of the first putters where it was a blade, but with that short spud neck, which made that putter toe hang. So that's why you saw the Tour, because a lot of Tour need toe hang. They have rotational things. And so that allowed that. And now what you see is a lot of blades. You still have mallets that are face balance, but you have a lot of blades that have different bearing toe hangs in it, which allows us to get a forgiving putter in somebody's hand with the toe hang they need. And I think that's the big part of it. And again, for the people that don't like looking at a mallet, what they've done is take some of the blades and, like you say, I call it the boxcar design, like just bigger. So it's still a blade, but it has a little bit more beef out and around it to make some more forgiveness for it too.
Right. So I think a little bit of that rotation discussion to make it clear for those who aren't familiar, if you take your putter back in a putting stroke motion and you try and square it up without rotating your putter from the top of your stroke, is it open or is it closed or is it centered? And that's the amount of rotation that's in it. I'm the kind of guy that I have a very, very little rotation in my backstroke, which is why I really like playing with like a longer neck blade putter, because it requires there's less toe hang, which means it's not going to push open or push closed. And the benefits of that toe hang is if you rotate your face a lot, it's going to allow the putter to come back and not fight that rotation. It's going to support it more. So I think it's funny that you mentioned the Tour discussions and Spider, because we see all these like made for Tour putters that have, it's a mallet putter that might have a small slant or a what they call like the knuckleheads with the, you know, that sort of fake plumber's neck. And you're seeing a lot of the new Spiders that have an actual plumber's neck on it. All that's done to support what you mentioned, which is the ability to actually let the putter head open up a bit rather than being that straight back, straight through, which is kind of crippling for a lot of golfers.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look at Scotty Scheffler.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, he went from watching him a bit, yeah, mallet, and he's been on a tear. So
yeah,
don't get me wrong, a mallet's not for everybody, but I do think there's more benefits in a mallet for a lot of people, or at least something with a little bit more MOI than a blade. There's a reason why you don't see an old school 8802 much in play anymore, right? Like, it's the most unforgiving putter you could ever have in your entire life in your bag. Now, is it cool? Yeah, it's kind of cool. It's retro. I get it. But it's not to say I don't have a couple of my collection, even though it doesn't fit me and it has no reason to be there. It's just cool. But, you know, I think the more and more we get into this, mallets to thicker blades are just going to be kind of the future, because it's just what I think golfers take for granted. And this gets more accentuated as the longer the putt gets. How much inertia or ball speed you lose off center of a putter, just because a putter isn't, it's a smaller object than like a driver and stuff, right? And so, you know, you get a little off, you can lose a lot of ball speed real quick. And so having that more mallet, more weight back there, that putter is not going to rotate as much. When I say rotate, wiggle when the balls hit. Like when I hit that putter, it's not going to want to open or close much. It's just going to stay stable. And when you get a, if you get a 30 footer and you hit it a little on the toe, now it's 5 feet short, but you hit it in the center, it's right at the hole. Well, if you have more of a mallet, they all kind of end up at the hole, right? They're just, that's what's the, what the good part of it is.
So companies like Odyssey, for example, have gone to a very interesting extreme on this and modified their actual face to accommodate varying strokes. How has AI1 been adapted? Has it been really interesting to see what people get into and how excited they are when they get fit into either the milled version or the standard version?
Yeah, absolutely. And Evenroll's done it for a long time. All these companies are doing that where, and I do think the Odyssey's done a really good job, because they did it where you can have a bunch of different looking putters, but still get that same kind of effect where it's the ball speed is very consistent across a little toe or a little heel. And it feels great. You can tell it when you hit it. You kind of can't tell if you hit it off the toe or if you hit it off the heel a little, which may bother some. It doesn't bother me. I like it. But yeah, it's been adopted very well. And that story has always been there. It's just you didn't really have a way to solve it as well. And now you have all these companies solving it. It's really helping golfers, you know, limit their putts, because they're not leaving them short or blasting them by.
So being as agnostic as you are, how much fun is it to see these companies? And I'll try to relate this back to myself. It's such a thrill to see them solve the same problem in different ways. Mm-hmm. So for you as a fitter who benefits from them solving the problems of regular golfers in a significant way, how much fun is it to sit back and say, how in the hell is that company going to tackle this conversation that's really isolated to this company right now? Is it, it's got to still be exciting after all these years.
Oh no, it's definitely exciting. And actually it's made our life as club fitters easier. You know, back in the day, I always joked, like before the cogs or adapters, right? Like I was using pop cans to shim shafts in sideways to open or close faces, just like the tour was, right? I've cut up aluminum pop cans and make shims and put them in there. You know, when waiting, we used to use whatever, lead tape, rat glue, all that kind of stuff. To be able to just do it on the fly and make it super easy has been awesome. And especially with like putters, like even like Lab, I can do a bunch of different sight lines on those. Adele, I can do a bunch of different sight lines because sight lines matter. It's cool. But you're right. They all they're all looking for their own twist. And sometimes I do think some of the companies do certain things better than others. I'll save those opinions for specifics, but my point is that I agree. It's fun every time I'm still a junkie of all junkies. So, I mean, I got like three drivers going right now and all the numbers are pretty darn good and it's very subjective and it's driving me nuts and I'm loving it.
You used to having one real obvious winner. Now you got a
handful. There's one real obvious winner the last couple of years. And this year it's been a little bit tough. They're all like, they all got this just little difference. Otherwise, they're right there.
Well, you mentioned adapters, and I think it's a conversation that is interesting to be had, because there are plenty of guys who can shift it to whatever part of the they want and have success, even though it's going to shape in the way that it's intended to. And there are other guys, depending on the adapter, where if you make a small change, it's suddenly a disaster. You go right back to stock and it's okay. I want to relate that back to the everyday player. Is it almost a bad thing to have that much freedom of adjustment at your disposal on the tee, or even, I suppose on the range more importantly?
It's dangerous in the wrong hands, right? Like yes, the answer is yes. And we try to educate our golfers, like, listen, if you want to, you can play with this. I suggest you use our perfect fit guarantee in our relationship for you to come back and get on the track, man, and we'll meet your concerns and play with if we need to. But any little change in that adapter, just because it says, you know, hey, it's going to do this, doesn't mean it's going to actually do it for you. And so you're changing a lot of spin and a lot of launch characteristics and possibly even where you hit it on the face by messing with that adapter. And so I always tell golfers, just be very careful. And I would seek help. That's why we offer it. we want you to be there, because I see so many folks that come back and I'll be like, how did you get to this setting? And they're like, well, my buddy. And I'm like,
yeah,
that's why are you struggling with this? Yeah, I'm not hitting it. And I'm like, well, that's because you just added 500 RPMs of spin to your driver by doing it.
And that's assuming they still deliver it the same way. I think one of the issues that people don't realize is when you adjust an adapter, you're changing the way the club presents to you at address. So if you make a change that opens the face up a little bit, you might be subconsciously shutting that down before you swing. And let me pre-tell you, that is not a good plan.
Well, and I'm a perfect example of that. So people will look at my driver and go, wow, Nick, you're a pretty good player. And you like a driver that shut. Well, I like it that shut because when I look down at it, I know I have a problem with, like I said, flipping, not getting my hands ahead. Mm-hmm. When I see that driver a little shut, it reminds me at address, hey, let's get through that ball. And I like that feeling. It helps me present it better.
Yeah, and that's part of the fitting process, right? You get there, and then you just leave it the hell alone until it stops working. Ideally, go back to resolve it with you guys, or, you know, have a very stressful range session and then go back to you guys.
Well, that's what I tell golfers all the time. I'm like, you don't have to stress yourself out with this. Like, well, for us, if you're a Club Champion customer, just go see your fitter at the company, whatever. Go ask questions. We're happy to help.
So I have one final question, and then we have something we need to talk about. And it's about I feel badly because I might mispronounce it. Is it Arterra? Is that how
Arterra.
Yeah, perfect. They're a new company out this year. Very interesting stuff. It's a familiar name from a very popular brand. And I believe you guys do have or had the exclusive on them for quite a while.
Yeah, we had the exclusive for the launch for 2 months, and now they're selling some other club fitters, but they are going to keep it a pretty tight little company. And you alluded to it. They're designer, designed probably the hottest shaft ever to be in golf. That's still the hottest shaft in golf right now. And, you know, he had done what he had done with for that company and wanted to go out and do his own thing. And I've known him for 20 some years, and he approached me and he said what he was doing, and I was all in. I told him I'm all in. I love the idea. I love the concept. And, you know, kind of taking let's take the big company away from, you know, hey, a shaft has to live within these specs and it has to live within these confines of what marketing can do or cost of manufacturing can do. And let's just look at it from a pure performance standpoint. And I think they came up with their first shaft here, which is the Alpha One. I think they really came up with a really good concept, and it kind of expands on the number one shaft in the world right now, but in a different way. And what I love about it is it might be the straightest shaft I've ever hit or seen in my life, because it has a lot to do with the materials they're using. And I'm not a shaft designer, and I forget sometimes the terminology, but it's the way the platform's woven. But it feels so smooth, but about as stable of any shaft I've ever hit in my life. And I'm a huge fan of it. I just think it's not for everyone. I'm not going to say it's for everyone, but it's definitely going to be a contender out there moving forward because they got a good designer, and they're going about it the right way. It's all about performance first.
It sort of trails off on a more challenging question, and we can try and tackle it briefly now, but it might be worthy of another bigger discussion. You talked about it not being for everyone, and I think there's a reality that exists there for every shaft. I mean, listen, there are a couple shafts out there I tried to hit, and I don't care how good of a swing I put on it, I could not make it work. And it's all in timing. You mentioned the different things that happen into a shaft. How hard is it, and how often do you guys have to train your staff to convince people to get away from that shaft they're determined to fit into.
Well, the beauty of it is at least we have all the facts on our side, right?
Yeah.
So the best part is at least it's like we have the ability for them to hit that shaft on that head and get results and go, I know you want this really bad, but if you want it, you see what you're going to get. I'm not signing off on that, but if you want to buy it, buy it. I would say that used to be a bigger issue than it is today. It's like all the discussions we've had today. At least I think the golfers getting a little bit more educated in the sense that they're not so locked in. But it's still a thing we got to fight to a degree. And part of it is, too, still, I think people don't understand. You can't fit off your best swings, right? So, like, auto flex, which I like to call ego flex or auto scam. I'm sorry if you guys have a relationship with them. I don't. That's just a 50 gram A-flex shaft that's hidden Korean technology that doesn't exist. And so what people liked about it is that they got up and they wailed on it. Like they hit it a mile. Well, yeah, because it's lighter and it's softer and you didn't know that because they don't tell you that. And so, but you hit it great, but then you got out there and played with it. It's why it only lasted a minute on the PGA Tour. You sprayed every fifth ball out of bounds. So, you know, like I tell golfers all the time, you can like a shaft and maybe you get lightning in a bottle with a shaft, right? Happens all the time. It fits. That's not a fitting. We're not looking for lightning in a bottle. We're looking for good swings, bad swings, and what's the average of it? Because that's what a good shaft does. Good shaft makes your bad shots way better, and that's actually what I care about the most. The good shots are the good shots. I care about making those bad shots better. I think that's where Arterra, I think they kind of even take that as their first thing to do is how do we make this thing straighter? And I love that without sacrificing ball speed.
But I didn't know if you were still talking about shafts there or talking about mallet putters.
Yeah.
Oh man. It's always so much fun to have you on. I've heard a couple rumors that you and THP are cooking up some pretty interesting stuff. Do you know anything about that?
Well, what it sounds like is Cassian Marketing has been working with Josh to create some kind of contest where people can enter. I don't know what that part is yet. I'm sure it'll be interesting. And the winner will get a full bag fitting and all the clubs that are fit from it.
Wow.
That's
listen.
And I don't think there's any restrictions on that. It's whatever you get fit for, we're going to build. So that's what I've been told. So that would be pretty interesting. I'm sure we'll create some content around that too, I'm guessing. So that'll be fun.
That sounds pretty exciting. It's the first person to hear about it wins the contest. So sorry, everyone, to burst your bubble. It's mine for the taking. No, I'm messing around. I think it's a solid teaser after 45 minutes of our madness. Exciting things, really, and the opportunity to go through the fitting. As much as the clubs are an unbelievable component to that, the ability to get fit like a tour pro, to have a full set of clubs that work really well for you is something everyone should chase. So definitely stay tuned for that. And Nick, before we wrap up today, any questions for me or any final thoughts?
I don't. I think you guys do a phenomenal job at Hacker's Paradise and in showing everybody in golf what's out there and being very fair about it too, you know, getting the good information to folks. And I love that.
Awesome. I appreciate that. Hey, if you folks are out there playing this weekend, have a great time. I hope you enjoyed the US Open. It's always an exciting time of year. It's hot here in Ohio. I don't know if it's hot up there in Illinois, but
it is.
Yeah. Drink your water if you're out there playing, not just the wobbly pops that we all know and love. And if you are playing golf, have fun and go check out Club Champion. See what they're doing if you don't know about it already. They got lots of social media activity going on, as well as the boys up in Canada killing it. So, yeah, enjoy your golf, and I'll see you guys next week.
THP Radio on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network, your number one source for all things golf. Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.